6:03 a.m. in Australia, and I'm up.
Woo! Looks like we're without Terrence today.
No!
And Philip?
No. Why? Why?
What do you mean, Philip? There's no Philip.
Another person in Australia is not there.
You are so incredibly slow, Fess.
No, Ben. You reach and dig for references that only you are readily available to know of. I know stuff, but...
Yeah, you do.
I don't know everything ever I've ever watched to be readily available in my head, like you are apparently. I mean, I make some really reaching jokes sometimes, but who I say them to does get them eventually, and then I'm berated.
So there's a recent death that shouldn't be mentioned on the show because nothing to do with webcomics, but it's actually sad. Giant Bomb's Ryan Davis passed away.
Oh, I heard about that, yeah.
Do you want to add that in the notes?
It's not really webcomic based.
If you're going to mention it on the show, it should be in the notes.
Well, Ryan Davis, what happened was after Jeff Gertzman got fired from GameSpot over the...
That's the guy?
Well, Jeff Gertzman and Ryan Davis co-founded Giant Bomb. Because Jeff Gertzman got fired from GameSpot after he published the review of Kane and Lynch that said, "This game sucks, don't buy it." And they were
advertising all over the site, too.
Yes, yep. And so Jeff Gertzman and Ryan Davis like came together and formed Giant Bomb, mm-hmm. which was later bought out by CBS. And it's really sad because Ryan Davis, he has good vocal presence. He got married the week he died.
Was it like an accident or like a terminal thing?
Oh man, you know, when someone gets married right before they die, that's usually like one of those.
Well, it's like it would have been
wrong.
It would have been worse, I think, if he got hit by a car versus if it was terminal. In that case,
they never mentioned how he died, so I'm kind of thinking maybe it was something terminal.
Oh. And,
yeah,
okay. You know, he is a little heavy looking, but I don't know if that has anything to do.
Well, Americans look heavy looking, so there you go.
Thank you, Kitty Hawk.
Yes,
I'm sorry. I used to live there. I've lost weight since I left.
You're still an American, are you not? Or did you?
For right now. I'm an American.
You know, they're not going to let you back in if you change your citizenship. I'm pretty sure.
What? Not you. Dual citizenship,
all they have to do is like listen to this podcast and look at your website, and they let you in.
Hi NSA for listening in on Skype. You already know what I talk about, so fuck you.
You talk about tits and penis.
No, I also talk about
sometimes
politics.
Together.
Sometimes together. Oh, that coitus talk.
They know my feelings on things.
the death of Ryan Davis is really, really sad because he really was a nice guy and one of those fair game reviewers that didn't answer to a corporate shill and you know, because the story of him and Jeff Gertzman really is one of those great stories about you know here's this big company trying to silence them, and then they were like, well, screw you, I'm gonna make my own with blackjack and hookers, and they actually did.
And an old friend of mine, Kat Smith, who used to work in a comic called Floppity, I've done a crossover with her too. She ended up doing a lot of artwork for Giant Bomb as well, but kind of got out before they got bought.
But still, it is actually quite sad. I think it's worth mentioning because it's just. Because
he was so young, and he's like he was a creator, and it's just like, and it really does mean like what's going to happen to what's going to happen to them, because like he was sort of the core.
Him and Jeff were the core.
Probably
will become another game review website and just disappear.
Maybe. Well, let's get started.
You're listening to the Webcomic Beacon at webcomicbeacon.com.
Well,
Well, all you have to say is that he has allegations that you don't have, you know, you can say he is alleged to have, because he hasn't actually
I spent a couple of weeks researching this, so I'll take this one.
This is actually really interesting, because
well, let's actually start the show so we can talk about it.
Yeah,
let's. Okay, Fess, let's get it started.
Let's get it started in here. Hello and welcome to another edition of the Webcomic Beacon here at webcomicbeacon.com, part of the Webcast Beacon Network, covering and promoting creativity and the creative process since 2007. I'm Fess! And with me we have, from Animation Aficionados, Ben Carver.
Thanks for having me back here.
And from, oh, I forget, but you have a Tumblr and a DeviantArt. I know that. It's Monty Road.
Vegetables for dessert. Dark humor to warm your cold black heart.
Vegetables for dessert. Thank you for
Monty
coming
Rhodey.
Back. Yes, Monty Road. Oh, is it Monty Rhodey?
Monty Rhodey, yes.
Oh, that's I always
awesome call it. A lot of people pronounce it Road. I don't care.
You're like well, me then, when people try to pronounce my last name. Yeah.
We love Monty Road. No.
And Kitty Hawk, which has no last name, and I don't know her real name, but there you go, and she's here from Sparkling Generation Valkyrie Yuki, sexy fun for everyone.
Thanks for having me, sgby.com, sexy fun.
Her real name is Name Redacted.
Yes.
But I'm sure people could find it.
Oh yeah, they can.
Yeah.
But it's Kitty Hawk, there you go.
And let's take a look at some of the news that we got here. Well, first off, I do want to mention we might lax on a bit more episodes until this September, but we'll see. Once again, this September or October, sometime this fall, I can't say for sure, will be the semi-finale for the Webcomic Beacon, in which I will officially put to rest the old Webcomic Beacon format, and we're also going to be having a top 100, our top favorite 100 webcomics episode, it's a mouthful. I'm gonna have to coordinate that to record that, but it's basically going to be four different episodes in order to give at least 2 minutes to each of the webcomics out of the 100, which I didn't even think about. But
wow.
Yeah, it's going to be crazy. This week, we're going to be talking about some news articles, and I do want to mention, you know what, there is some site news I want to get out of the way, too, and I just totally forgot about it. But the Webcast Beacon Network is currently accepting user-submitted articles, so tutorials, not reviews, or other sort of promotionals, interviews, tutorials, guides, and things like that. There is a submission form on the website in the footer. It's submit an article and just type something up. You have to register for an account on the website in order to do it. That's how the form works and how I prefer it to work. And so there is that. And if you haven't been paying attention, I've been doing comics of the week. So go ahead and check those out if you'd like. And people can certainly, and I've also been doing like crowdfund picks, or I'll even put in like pre-order picks there if I happen to see any. These are entirely subjective stuff on our end of if anyone on the crew or myself pick them or not. But you can feel free to hustle a little bit by sending an email at webcomicbeacon@gmail.com or tweeting at webcomicbeacon. However, I do ask that you don't just automatically add us to a mailing list or tweet at us every time your comic updates, because then I will block you. As well, while I appreciate a good hustle, that does become annoying. So I am starting to actually put things into a folder about things that people tell me about, so I can check either later for maybe a webcomic of the week, or if you got a Kickstarter, Indiegogo, or a pre-order going on. I know Ben and I will disagree on the uses of Kickstarter, but personally, I think using Kickstarter as a pre-order thing for a comic is A-okay for me. I've never been disappointed. But then again, of course, with Kickstarters and Indiegogos, there's the risk.
Why do it when there's print on demand?
Because you want the big book, and usually when you do a Kickstarter, you get a really good deal.
Yeah, but the deal is that like it's we're now we've had this show, but I will say like at this point, print on demand is good enough. And also the thing is that
if you do
I don't
a print
really
on
understand what I'm backing here. It's not like that. We'll
you can't do a print on.
We'll talk about this during the Alan Moore thing.
Okay. Well, why don't we just start with that then?
All right.
Get that out of the way since we're sort of talking about it. So, Monty, you had this Alan Moore link. So you want to go ahead and tell us about this?
Yes. Alan Moore recently resorted to using Kickstarter to finance his latest project, which is a series of film shorts called Jimmy's End. I believe they actually produced the first two on their own without external funding, and to finish up the other three, they've gone to crowdsourcing. And so it's kind of funny just seeing Alan Moore poke his head out again in producing content.
Well, I think it's because he just doesn't like working with anybody. So,
well, after they bastardized his work, of course he doesn't. Every night he goes and he prays in front of Glycon asking for someone to understand his vision, and no one does, and Glycon never answers.
Well, he is a good writer, and like the thing is that he did get burned by Hollywood. So
three times
he got burned by the comics industry.
Yeah, and I mean, like you can't blame the man.
And Glycon never answers his prayers.
What the hell are you talking about?
But Alan Moore worshipped the snake god.
All right, that is fine. Whatever.
People worship God, okay? Let's move on.
But no, it's like, so what we're talking about is like, here's the thing. Any sort of Kickstarter, it's not really a sort of, it's a gamble, which is why usually it would only fund things that of people that you can trust more or less, or they have some sort of credibility and or accountability, and things like that. So it's always going to be a gamble of whether or not you will get something that you invest in because of how the terms are set. But it's like, for something like this, you know, it's a big thing. People want to see it, so people are going to invest in it. And what they have, they have things where you can get stuff for this. And a lot of times you can get like the PDF version of it, or you can get the print. I can't see any sort of cost-effective method for doing print-on-demand for like 100-page-plus books.
They're
expensive.
You didn't research. It's
expensive.
It's been there for years.
No, they're there, but they're expensive.
No, they aren't.
They're
Express does it on demand. I don't have to pay a damn thing. All I do is put my book on there, put a link for them to buy it, and I pay nothing.
You get profit.
No, I'm talking about for...
Oh, yeah. You're talking about getting even more of the pie, but here's the deal.
No,
dude. How long is it going to take you to sell all those freaking books to get the full amount of profit? That's the question you got
to
ask.
I think Fess wants to build a fort in his.
No. Here's the thing.
We covered this in the last episode pretty well.
I don't think so because I don't think we specifically talked about this. See, if you're doing a Kickstarter or a pre-order or an Indiegogo or a pre-order on your website, you do the pre-order to get up to a goal so that you can buy the higher quality, higher profit margin.
The quality is negligible.
Let me finish. As putting that aside, also the higher profit margin. And if you are doing a Kickstarter and you have all these people and you reach this goal for printing and you have enough backers on it, you're going to get rid of a whole lot of books, and it's up to you whether, and like we said last time, it's up to you whether or not also doing all the DIY stuff, the packaging and mailing is worth it for you.
Does that let me put it this way, and then I'll let Kitty Hawk pretty much reinforce what I'm about to say, because I know she will. But the way I see it is this: print on demand for comics or small book runs or any book run has been profitable in the last 5 years on the web. It has been, you know, companies like Lulu exist, Amazon Demand, and Comic Express, which I mentioned earlier. They all exist. They all give reasonable profit margins to the creators, and the books are printed as they are requested. You know, if one person wants one book, they send out one book. If 10 people want a book, they print 10 books, and it's cost effective. The quality is good enough. It's not printed with diffuser oil. It's printed like a real printer. It's and it works, and it's a good model. And to do this, I want it all up front, is kind of foolish, because you're putting a lot of risk. And if it doesn't work out, if you don't get to your goal, then guess what? There's no book, and
nobody takes your money.
Okay, so here's what I've got to say. All right, so my friend and boss, actually, Gina Biggs, recently had a Kickstarter, and she needed $10,000 to do a run of books. Now, she only had 388 backers. Now, that's not – now, everybody who backed did not necessarily get a book. In fact, there's a lot of people who just went for the PDF. In fact, there's over 100 people who went for the PDF option. Mm-hmm. So right there, that's 288 people that got a book. Mm-hmm. Now, this is probably a run of, I don't know, probably like 1,000 or something like that.
Yeah.
So the deal is that now you've got like 712 books mm-hmm. that you have not sold. Now, right. Granted, yes, you have paid for the printing cost.
Yep.
But the thing is that you're going to have to sit on those things, and you're not going to get the full profit for years. Like, I've done t-shirts, I've done buttons, I've done all this merchandise. Now, I enjoy making merchandise, but like the real money does not actually come from these big run things I do. I actually make a lot more money like just doing commissions and things like that. But the real issue about my have about these Kickstarters is that if you're you can think about all that wonderful profit that you're going to get when you eventually sell all those books, or you can be realistic and say, why the fuck am I doing all this work when I can just put it on the web and I just get hits of money every time someone buys one, instead of doing this big rush to get a bunch of books, and then you sit on those books. And then I've seen so many Kickstarters where, oh, here's my previous book I can't get rid of as a bonus for the Kickstarter because I can't get rid of these things. Now, I know people who sell through their books, but they generally do small runs. But these are big runs, like if you're wanting $10,000. And yeah, you're not actually going to see that profit for years. So really, honestly, I think honestly at this point, even though it's like you're not getting more, it's better. It's like why I'm looking into Redbubble. I don't want to do runs of t-shirts anymore.
What's
it's
Redbubble?
Fucking shit.
What's Redbubble?
Okay, Redbubble is this website. It's kind of like Cafe Press. It's but better. And I'm actually looking at the quality of the shirts to see if I want to go with it. Because the deal is that I've done runs of shirts. And what ends up happening is you have to guess at what sizes you want. And then you're left with like a gabillion smalls and double XLs. And the thing is that I would rather do this. Yes, I'm not like getting each t-shirt for $3 a piece. And then I sell them for like, I don't know, like $15 and get $12 profit. I may get $5 off each one. But that means that I didn't have to put all that money up front, and I don't have to wait for all those shirts to disappear. I just sit back and occasionally, oh, there's a check. Yay.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. This is a better, far better model for someone who is starting out webcomic
and shipping
business person. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's like Kitty Hawk said about the example of someone who says, oh, my passbook, I still have to get rid of. So if you donate this much, you get my passbook for free, probably shipped in a box packed with shredded pieces of my passbook.
I'm looking at this money made
from the Kickstarter.
I'm looking
at the copies that have been, you know, for the people that actually want it in the Kickstarter. And then, you know, you don't have to print out all those excessive copies. You can just bank the cash.
Okay, so a run of like 300 is actually going to end up being really expensive. And you really, I don't understand why you did that. Like, the thing is that I don't understand why here's the thing. Now, Alan, we haven't really talked about Alan Moore's thing, but Alan Moore, at least he's like, this is something he's producing. It's not really out there. Well, the thing about a lot of these books is this stuff's already online.
Not always.
It's already online.
Not always.
I can read it already. This is just basically, hi, let me repackage this in, and it's never like, I want to make a hard copy with a gorgeous print in there. It's always, hey, you can't really tell the difference between this. This was print on demand.
No. Sometimes there's exclusive stories in the print version. There's other little extra stuff.
But you can get the PDF, and then why are you doing this?
Because some people want the actual book. If I go
print on demand.
No. It's okay. It's like if I actually, as a buyer now, as an audience member, as a fan, it's like if I look at something and they're doing a Kickstarter for something, and it's like the volume 2 or volume 3, yes, I would love a backer option that lets me get the other two books too. I love that. Okay, good price.
That's not my point. My point is that, why are you doing – the point of Kickstarter is to fund a project that you normally could not do on your own. And I am so sorry, but print-on-demand exists, and it's about the same quality as traditional print now. So fuck you. You're just getting – you're just wanting a bunch of – you want a wad of cash up front. And like I've said before, there is nothing stopping me from saying – I just got a bunch of money. Fuck you. I'm going to do print on demand and I'm going to send those to you and you'll never know the difference. And now I run away with like $30,000.
Well, okay. So now we know never to fund a Kickstarter to Kitty Hawk.
Kickstarters won't be about books.
That's why I said at the beginning, it is a gamble, and that's why whoever you back, you need to trust them.
A book is not a gamble.
Any sort of investment is a gamble, and Kickstarter is technically supposed to be an investment thing.
A book is, like Kitty Hawk said, a book is not a gamble. Books are tangibles that have been proven for thousands of years.
I said an investment is a gamble. Kickstarter is an investment system.
I am not finished yet. Something like Ouya is a gamble because it is an unproven, you know, quote unquote, other platform that there's no developers for. No reason that anyone should invest to it. That is a gamble. Or the Pebble smartwatch is a gamble. Those are real gambles where the technology is unproven, the market's unproven, and you're investing because you believe in the product or the market exists.
People are going to keep putting books up on Kickstarter, and their fans are going to keep funding them. Take that.
I know, and that's okay. That is perfectly fine that if people want to back a book. My issue is that I think it's kind of a silly thing because it's like, I'm sorry, there's already a way for you to do this on your own. I don't understand why you need investment. Now, I'm not going to tell people they can't, but I'm just going to say you're stupid.
I've already said why, and I think we should just stop and say we agree to disagree at this point because we're not going to convince each other. So, Alan Moore.
Now, I'm going to fly out to Australia. And I'm going to go to Kitty Hawk's door, and I'm going to stand there, and I'm going to argue with her for hours about Kickstarter.
That'll be like,
going to kick your ass.
That's a funny end. I don't even know what I'm fighting about, but it seems like a good fight to fight. But anyway, back to Alan Moore.
Come on over. I got some coffee. I just bought some bagels. We'll talk for hours.
Yeah, awesome.
All right. So Alan Moore is doing this thing because he doesn't want to work with anybody. Except himself.
Doesn't want to work with Hollywood or, you know, the formal institutions.
Understandable that he doesn't want to work for Hollywood anymore. So, and also, like, this is great. This is what Kickstarter really is about. This is about, like, being able to be funded without having to go to the big guys and then them putting their fingers all in it.
It's all about, you know, if you can present a vision, if the backer believes in the vision, a real vision, a risk, which this is, then you can go into it and invest in it, be an angel investor. And that's the thing. That's what Kickstarter is all about. Absolutely.
I expected this to have a lot more backers and actually have made a lot more money. This is really ridiculous that this has only made 52,621 pounds, which I'm like, what? Why is this? Let's see. How much is that?
That's a lot of USD.
I'm seeing what it is in USDs right now.
Conversion rate. It's usually around $2 to a pound, but I mean,
so it's around $79,000, which I'm wow. like, why is this so low? But then like,
what do you mean low? That's a huge amount.
That's a low. That's low for Alan, like, okay.
But it's Alan, yeah, Moore, Alan and Moore. He's kind of a crazy like, person.
Okay,
and
like some like books get like, okay, my goal is 10,000. I get 32,000, and it's like, this is only getting 79,000, which is like less than like, it's just.
It just goes to show you he doesn't have that pull.
I would have expected this to double its money.
He doesn't have that pull. That's just what it is. Or, I mean, if it was Alan Moore and a comic book project, maybe, because maybe that's what people want, an Alan Moore comic. But this is just some sort of movie thing that I'm sure that people who know Alan Moore as a comic book writer don't know. Is like, I don't know, I don't care. Give me a comic,
well,
or you're
how
a crazy
well
person.
Advertised was this? That's the thing.
I only heard of it now.
How well advertised was this Kickstarter?
Yeah, I only heard of it now.
The industry certainly wouldn't want to advertise this.
And also, another thing to look at is, you know, sometimes a Kickstarter that's too successful that goes because Alan Moore has met his goal. Let's get that straight right here.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And sometimes Kickstarters that goes, you know, 10 times over their goal, 100 times over their goal, like Pebble, which I mentioned earlier. I mean, Pebble screwed their early backers something fierce when they're like, oh, yeah, you'll by paying the $200 up front, you're going to get a Pebble before everyone else. They have manufacturing issues and then they sent an email. Oh, yeah, by the way, yeah, they're going to be in Best Buy and your pre-order still hasn't shipped yet. Sorry.
Yeah. That's the problem with Kickstarter. Well, that's the thing. That's why, like, investment for, you know, when the old style investment. And even this, it's a gamble, and that's why you got to question whether or not you want to back it.
Also, and, one more
yeah, admit that that's kind of douchey. Well, though.
A word of advice.
It is a douchey. No. And the thing is that another thing I want to say about Kickstarters, and I don't think we really said it on the previous show, was for every Kickstarter we see, there are a shit ton of Kickstarters that do not make it.
Yeah, but
and,
so
yeah.
But and, so what? So yeah,
but I'm just
of
saying,
course.
Like, you know, we I guess we're sort of like. I don't know. I'm kind of getting tired of this whole people saying, oh, I'm going to do a Kickstarter. It's going to be so successful. And I'm just like,
well, no, you should never have that mentality.
You do know that's not going to, like, it may not go well. You do know this, right?
Yeah.
And I think what it is everyone is now thinking that this is like free money or something.
And that's
and
their
I
problem.
Guess that's where my irritation comes from a lot of Kickstarters. It just seems like, why are you doing this? Well, I'm doing this because I want to make some money. And it's like, but what you're doing is possible on your own. Yeah, well, I just want some money.
Well, aside from that, I mean, that is, I mean, you know, some people need that slap of reality. It's like, no, you're, like, I've seen some Kickstarters, it's like, wow, that is terrible. And so it's like, that's something that they got to learn on their own. But I will say, if anybody is out there going to be looking at one of these sort of things, really think about the logistics of everything you're putting into.
Oh, yeah.
It's really, really important. You factor in
the physical goods you use, the better.
Too many Kickstarters I've seen, like, halfway through, the person's like, holy shit, I forgot about shipping.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, no. Or they say something like, oh, shit, I forgot. All my shit's like at 72 DPI. Oh, fuck. And it's like, what? Did you not fucking plan on this? And it's like, or like, oh, I didn't think about, like, I might need a programmer.
Or what about oh, crap, it's an electronic device. I need to get this passed by the FCC before I can sell it.
Oh, yeah, that's always great.
Hang on. I think I need to text somebody then.
With anything. You got to think it through before you actually start, like, saying, okay, here's what we're going, here's my plan. But, yeah, I love it when you read it, when you're watching a Kickstarter and then you see something ridiculous, like, oh, shit, I forgot. And it's like, what? You didn't? What? Shipping is the one, I guess, that I always laugh about because it is the one that people forget about. They're like, holy shit, they're shipping?
Yes. And international shipping will kill you.
Oh, God, that's burned a couple of Kickstarters I know. They ended up having to tell, like, people who are, like, overseas, I'm so sorry, you will have, like, I'm going to have to ask you for more money. And then, like, they're like, fuck you.
All right. Anyway. I think we should move on since we've already spent. It's actually time to go to break now. So we'll be right back.
This program is part of the Webcast Beacon Network at webcastbeacon.com. You can find and follow us on Tumblr, Facebook, Google+, and Twitter. Just search for Webcast Beacon. Have thoughts or questions on an episode? You can leave us a voicemail at 1-320-310-0922 or email us at webcomicbeacon@gmail.com. The Webcast Beacon Network, covering and promoting creativity in the creative process since 2007. Comics, art, and writing discussions, interviews, news, and reviews at webcastbeacon.com. Now, back to our show.
There's so many stories about rape and stuff going at conventions. I mean, first there was the whole the whole MAGFest incident this year, and then there's these things.
Well, it's just that, you know, when there's a large group of people, you know,
yeah, like to ruin everybody else's fun.
Well, yeah. the percentage of bad people per, you know, the larger the group is, the just logistics, the percentage of bad people to happen to be in that group increases.
Exactly. You know, the percentage stays the same, but you get the more raw numbers of bad people.
Right,
meant
right.
To say fast.
No, that's what I meant, but you knew what I meant.
Yeah,
so let's introduce the topic.
So,
it's actually funny. I was actually talking to a couple of guys, and it still surprised me at how well that MAGFest incident was covered up.
They always cover those up. Well, I mean, like, I've heard incidents at like different conventions, and it's like, you know, you won't hear about it. But the thing is that, you know, it happens. And the thing is that they usually cover it up by like making both parties happy and then, like, pretending it never happened because the legal reasons, and also if the hotel finds out.
That convention's locked down and not even allowed.
I actually feel that they should be open about it and they should condemn it, but I understand that, you know, people are fucking pussies, so.
I know, but it's actually funny because I actually found, since the last time I mentioned the MAGFest incident, a video from the head honcho of RVT. Actually, he apologized for it, but he apologized for it by saying that it was because of adult content on the live stream, not mentioning at all about the poor woman that they got drunk and felt up on camera.
Oh, that incident. Yeah.
Yeah. But let's talk about this during the Dragon Con thing, because I've known about this Dragon Con thing.
So, Kitty Hawk, do you want to actually fill out a little bit of history about Edward Kramer and Dragon Con?
Well, my thing is that I started with Dragon Con back in like 2003. My first Dragon Con was in 2002, but I did the first webcomics panel ever at Dragon Con in 2003. And I knew some of the people who, like Tech Ops, and some of the people who were on the staff, and you know, I'd heard the story. Okay. Let's set this one up because let's go. Okay, so DragonCon co-founder Edward Kramer was recently removed from his position at DragonCon. But actually what they did is they did the thing that
they reincorporated.
Everyone had said they should do for fucking years, which is form another corporation, have that buy the other corporation, and buy out Ed Kramer.
You're kind of skipping ahead into the future.
But what I'm saying is this is what's been okay.
So Ed the Kramer, background.
Everyone knew about the. I'm going to try to keep this as
the like accusations of pedophilia.
Accusations of being with some teenage boys, because you know it's not really pedophilia, but it's like he was with underage boys.
Because okay. Pedophilia applies to a much younger age group, technically, if you talk about
these were underage boys. Now, I don't know the ages. That's probably going to be discussed in the court case. But the thing is that everyone knew about this for years. They knew that there was an incident in 2000, and that they were questioning him about it, and he used health reasons to stay out of it. And everyone knew this. Everybody who's involved in Dragon Con knew about this but no one really gave a shit. And they knew he was still being paid by the board. It only became an issue until in 2011 when he was found by the Connecticut police with a 14-year-old boy. And he was arrested on a felony charge of risk of injury to a child. And this is what started the whole Dragon Con is harboring a pedophile. And of course, once again, Dragon Con said, no, we're just going to keep him on. He's only alleged. It's just, right. It's just anything like that. And then the next incident occurred in 2013, where I think he got caught again. And he was like on bail or something like that. So the thing is that,
you know,
Dragon Con finally had to do the thing that they should have done the whole time, which is form another corporation, have it buy out the old corporation, keep Ed out. They finally did that.
Now you have a different story than I do. Hmm. I've heard that actually for years they were trying to get him to go away, basically.
They said that.
Now,
they said that
this
for
is
years.
This is not what I heard from them. This is what I heard about other people that go to Dragon Con frequently. Now, this is I'm going to be saying what I heard. I've heard that they were actually trying for years to try to get him off the board. The reason why they couldn't reincorporate is because they legally couldn't. There were because of only accusations and not actually, which is why he was using the money to keep him from actually going to court. Legally standing, they couldn't reincorporate because of.
Oh yeah, they didn't have a morality clause. That's what it was.
Yeah. So eventually, dumbasses. It sounds like they bought him out and reincorporated, though the amount wasn't specified. But they were trying, but they legally couldn't because of technicalities, and this Edward Kramer knew of those technicalities.
So basically they were operating without the one thing you always do whenever you have a corporation, which is a morality clause, which is just there so that you can kick someone out if you need to. And the thing is that I honestly believe that they didn't, like, they say that they were trying to kick him out, but they really were not trying hard enough. And the thing is that I know the other stuff that was going on with Dragon Con with their fights with the hotels. That, like, I remember the year that Marriott was trying to kick Dragon Con out for moral reasons. And so what ended up happening that year is Dragon Con just didn't have anything in the Marriott, and the Marriott lost a lot of money. And the next year, the Marriott had Dragon Con back. But the reason that Dragon Con was able to do this is they had the huge war chest that they could use to hire lawyers and fight Marriott. So my thinking is that when they say, oh, for years we were trying to kick this guy out, I think what they meant to say is, oh, no, all that money could just go away. Oh, God. And that's why I think that when they say we tried to kick him out for years.
But he wasn't actually even on the board. He wasn't making any decisions for years. He was just
sitting
there. Yeah, he was making money. And I can't see why they wouldn't want to get rid of him. If he's just making money, they're not making extra money by having Edward Kramer on. They're not making anything extra.
They were having legal fights with other people. And I can understand that if you're having legal fights with, like, the Marriott, you don't want to have something where there's a risk you could lose your war chest in a leadership change, basically moving to another corporation. So I understand that. At the same time, I also say, fuck you, because don't be harboring this guy who, okay, you have a convention and young people go to this convention and you're just basically giving this guy.
But he's not there. He hasn't even attended for like the past 5 years. They're not harboring him. He's far away.
They were giving him money.
Do you know what harboring means?
But I mean, they were giving him money. Every year.
Because they had to.
I know, but they could have just folded the corporation and started another corporation. This would have meant that the money had to have been split. And the thing is that I know that that's difficult. I'm not saying, oh God, it's so easy. You just go down to the 7-Eleven and you just switch corporations. But at the same time, I just think it's hilarious that it took two more incidents in order for them to finally say, oh no, we need to get rid of this guy. Like, Okay. Fuck you.
I will give you that as a possibility, but bottom line is we don't actually know for sure.
We don't know the whole story. And this is all based on stuff that I've heard around the convention.
Me too.
So, I mean, it's all conjecture, but the thing is that the fact of the matter is they finally did the one thing that everyone said they should do, which is form another corporation to buy out the old corporation. So now they've done that. Guy's out. DragonCon's clean. Everyone can have a good time.
Until the next incident.
Well, yes. Yeah. But they're, you know, cons are always a battle.
And that what brings us to the next piece. Now, this particular one is something that basically got all around on Tumblr. They posted an image of the guy. And apparently, a scan of a 3-page police report showing an official accusation of rape. Now, I did a lot of research on this, probably more than I would do in general. But because it involved local cons and local cons that actually I was a part of, I wanted to make sure I made an informed decision before I made, like, basically a public statement on it and reblogged it. Because, you know, reblogging and retweeting can be very, very dangerous if you don't check your sources, and then somebody that's possibly innocent
gets harassed. I got a question for you. I'm looking at these.
This isn't in general sort of statement, Ben, so I'm kind of weaving two different things into this this next part. But you were going to say, sorry?
Yes. Did you do the blackouts on this report?
No, the blackouts were there in the scan. And this was like the first sort of thing that I looked at. It was, is this a real police report? The original post had been deleted. And there's like, couldn't find this information like on a website or anywhere. And you know, all of the spelling errors in it was just, what the hell?
Oh, they're police, okay?
Well, it's like, it's an official fucking document. It should be.
Yes. Yes.
But
yes.
Apparently, and this took me a couple of weeks, I sent in a public information records request, and it was confirmed. It is an actual, authentic document. It is a police report. It isn't.
Have you ever seen like police reports are totally full of errors. It's so you can't really question that.
I did. I guess I expected more of people in power to actually write some shit
that's
out.
Your mistake.
No, but so it took me a while to do that. So I was trying to think of how to publicly, because this is only an accusation. The person didn't want to press charges, didn't want to go through a rape kit, which is not uncommon.
Yeah,
and it's also not. It is also uncommon to have a false police report. It is within the single percentages of any sort of crime of a false report. So it's like, do I, and when I was looking through the 10,000 notes on Tumblr, most of them are just like reblogs and whatnot. Nobody's looking at it. Nobody's paying attention. Nobody knows for sure. They're just saying, oh, I saw this on the internet. This happened. But,
it's Tumblr. Tumblr kind of is weird in that, like,
Twitter,
you know,
too.
Most people just reblog. They don't really comment on it.
Right.
Which so, is... but like, this just looks like what happened is she issued the report. And I imagine there's probably something going on in the background right now where, they're probably doing something like along the lines of compensation or something like that. Cause like, there are rape incidents at conventions, like
all the time.
A lot. And the thing is that a lot of them get swept under the rug, usually because like they settle. Or they talk to the parties and they figure out what they can do in order to keep this from becoming a legal battle.
This was with an underage subordinate.
And this happens, dude. I've heard of guests being caught with young girls, and this happens. And the thing is that it's not right. But what they do is they take them aside and say, okay, what can we do to make this go away? And this probably, and I don't know much about this case. This is the first time I've heard about it, but you know, there is wheeling and dealing in order to keep it from becoming a legal battle because the convention can be held liable, even though they say in their fucking, you know, TOS, we are not liable.
It is a for-profit company of which this guy is the LLC owner for.
Yeah, exactly. So, and so he is liable for anything that happens at the convention. So, of course, I can imagine that there probably is some settlement shit going on right now.
And there was there was another accusation of rape in one of the notes, and there are lots of people attesting against his character. And of course, this is all hearsay. Yeah. It's like, you can't prove this one way or another. And so
I promise you, if you reveal something horrible about one person online, that you will have five people that will attest that his character is the worst character possible, even if you know him personally and think he's the greatest guy in the world.
Right.
I can guarantee that will happen no matter who it is.
Yeah.
Rapists is a lot of time they're also serial offenders. And so, I mean, if there's been one incident, there's usually other incidents.
Well, not necessarily.
Like one incident you hear about.
In this case, I think like maybe some old, like in cases where you hear about someone and a young girl, usually there are, with young girls, it tends to come up that, yeah, there were some other incidents. Let me tell you about this time. And then, you know, the old wounds start opening up. And the thing is that I don't know much about, like I said, I don't know much about this case, mm-hmm. but this does happen, and I know that cons try to keep themselves legally clean, but you know, this is going to happen when you have a large group of people. But in this case, I think this guy's just taking advantage of people, and I don't know. Like I mean, I don't know much about this case.
He's officially accused.
He's accused. We'll see what happens.
He was accused, but the charges are dropped, if I'm reading this properly.
They're not dropped. They weren't pressed.
Sounds like there's been some
They weren't some dropped.
Settlement.
They weren't dropped. They weren't pressed.
Arrest is what it says.
So basically, I think what's going on right now is there's probably some settlement shit going on in the background. Like, basically, what can we do to make this go away? And we probably won't hear much more about this.
Well, I don't know. So there's that. And just like with all the different claims, I mean, there's claims supporting the character saying that it was a false report or.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's
There's claims against the character. And I decided I'm going to fill up my obligation through the next con that comes up because I already said I was going to be there. But you know what? I don't want to be involved from here on out unless something changes for the better.
Hear something to the that says like this guy's clear or
I don't know. It's
we don't know.
I don't want to be involved with this. You know,
not be involved with any convention because I promise you every convention out there has at least one incident like this that you just don't know about.
Well, here's the thing. This is the guy who owns the con. This is the guy who runs the con. It is a for-profit con, so it's not like he can just go away.
It is worse if someone who owns it is actually part of the impropriety, but at the same time,
and then if he can't be removed, is the thing.
But at the same time, like I'm trying to say, is every con has an instance.
Not every con.
Now, I will say that some of the bigger... Now, the thing is that what we're hitting against is that what you're talking about, Ben, is when you have a large group of people, you have an increased chance of an incident occurring. Now, the thing about this one is that this guy was in a position of power.
That's true.
Probably used it to his advantage, and that's what makes it.
That is wrong. That is
right.
Wrong.
Right.
No.
But it's not like it happened with like guests themselves amongst themselves. This is about the people that run the con. That's the biggest problem that I'm having this with. You know,
because you can kick a guest out. You can kick an attendee out.
You can kick an employee out. But this is the guy who runs the con, which is the biggest problem.
You can't kick the owner out.
Yeah, it's
unless there's a board.
Yeah, and I'm not sure what there is here, but it's like when I'm looking at this and it's like I had this whole write up on Tumblr, which I'll list out. It's very, very down the middle sort of stuff. I'm very careful about my wording. And also it's also a general cautionary thing about just up and read blogging, retweeting stuff without any real research. But it's because it's really sad when you see a fun con be the collateral damage. It's like I went to Anna Minneapolis, of which this guy ran, which is like the first con after this whole event came out. And it was like, well, people are there. They're still having fun. I'm sure a lot of people didn't know. But, one person isn't the whole con either. You know, there's.
Well, yeah, definitely.
And he made himself fairly scarce. I mean, he stayed in con ops pretty much the whole time. So.
But we'll see. We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens with this. And like the thing is that Yeah, these things happen at conventions, but this is a little different because this is the founder, but, you know.
And the runner.
That, that, anyway. That is true. That right. is true. But like I said, it's, it, like I said, you know, a couple months back when I brought up the MAGFest incident, I've talked to people about it, and I'm still shocked that people who go to cons, often go to cons, still don't know about it. And it's still shocking right. to me because it just it wasn't even MAGFest themselves that worked to cover it up, but the people involved to work to cover it up.
Okay. And, like the thing is that like with any convention, we're a little more into the scene than most people. Most people are there just to have fun. They don't give a shit about like see the thing about the Dragon Con like thing is that like most people don't know about that. They're just there to have fun, to see their guests. They don't give a shit about all like to them that's even though like it is a serious thing, they just think of it as drama. And they don't really want to think about that. That's not their deal.
That's not where they're going.
And you can't judge like and like the thing is that in these two cases, like in the case of Ed Kramer and the case of this guy, these are really bad incidents because it is creators of the convention that are doing this, and that actually does reflect on the convention. But when it's an attendee or a guest, that's a little different because you can kick those people out and just never have them again. But I agree that the convention should not be actively trying to cover it up.
No,
no. But unfortunately, you're in America where it's not just that there'll be like a criminal investigation and then a criminal case and all that. If there's also the issue of there is monetary, like legal shit going on, like the convention can get sued and probably lose its entire war chest, maybe have to fold under. And I understand that they're trying to say, you know, save their bacon and all. But at the same time, the best way to deal with it is you got to have a morality clause in your fucking all the contracts so that you can then say, you're out, dude, kick that person out and move on. But when it is the creator, that's going to be a little harder because like in the case of like. Ed Kramer, he was a founder, and in this case of this, he's a founder, so you might as well, or what you should do is like, conventions, like I said, have done this before. They just fold, get bought by another convention, and, you know, just form another convention, buy the old convention, move on. But no one ever wants to do that, because that usually means that some of the money's going to be lost along the way. So, it's usually about money.
Speaking of money and drama.
Money, money, money.
Monty, you have this other thing about Enders.
Oh, God.
Oh, you finally get a chance to talk again?
Okay, so.
Sorry,
yes.
Dude.
We're on to the Enders game boycott?
Yes.
Okay. Well, honestly, this has been going on for quite a long time, but let's see. Yeah, that's right. Orson Scott Card, creator of Ender's Game, the comic book. Basically, he's also well known for being, I believe he's Mormon, right?
Yes.
Okay, yes. He's Mormon. So he's been known to take publicly anti-gay stances on a variety of subjects, and I believe
and give money.
Yes. Well, actually, he was on the board of a very prominent organization, wasn't he?
Yes, he was, actually. He works actively towards, like, making gays' lives hard.
Yes, he does. And so, basically, in retaliation for everything he's been doing for the last 30, 40 years or so of his life, the gay community has tried to boycott Ender's Game. And, honestly, I'm not really sure how successful they're going to be, but at least it's making some noise.
Boycotts work. Community radio.
Oh, come on!
It doesn't really work because let me tell you a story of something I remember.
Yeah, I know.
Ellen DeGeneres did a great spoof of this when she came out when she used to have her own sitcom Ellen. Her character came out the same time that she came out, and in the story she had her character was having a coming out party. And one of her new gay friends says, oh, you can't have those potato chips here. And Ellen's like, well, why not? They're my favorite potato chips. And And the new lesbian friend was like, well, that company's, you know, against gay, so he can't have the potato chips. And it becomes this whole thing of how much are you going to take out of your life to claim that you are pure, that you are clean hands of anything that is against you. And it gets to a ridiculous number because you really can't do that. It's because a good example of this is horror writer H.P. Lovecraft.
Yes.
How many people would absolutely refuse to touch anything that even, you know, is even slightly based off his work? How many people will do that, even though he was like a raving racist?
Well, fortunately, he's long dead and no longer profiting from his work.
Something about this, because like the thing is that I believe that you can separate work from the person. Like in the case of Roman Polanski, you know, raped a child. He made some good movies, but in this case, it's kind of like this guy is like actively continuing to try to do this, and so it's like it's like, why are you doing this? But my irritation comes from not really, like, I can separate the person from the work, but my irritation with this whole thing is that the studio is now actively going out there and saying, well, we support LGBT, come see the movie. But it's so obvious that this is just basically, oh no, we're going to lose money.
It's damage control more than anything else.
Yeah, it's not really, they don't really give a shit. They honestly just want money. And the thing is that, like, it's sort of irritating because we can say that Orson Scott Card is a son of a bitch, and maybe if you see him on the street, you should punch him in the face. But
we're not saying
if you want to go see Ender's Game, go see Ender's Game. Like, and the other thing, and about the point about you can't be a pure agent, that's very true. And I actually accept that in my life, that I have to shop at places, I have to buy things that I know are, you know, probably using slave labor and things like that. In fact, a lot of things I know they're using slave labor. But the thing is that in my own life, like when I do my own merchandise and things like that, I try to create as little suffering as possible. But you can't do that.
Reduce your exposure as much as possible. Granted, yes, you can't completely get it out of your life. But personally, I try. I mean, I can't guarantee I succeed, but well, I'm probably sure I'm not succeeding, but you gotta at least try. That's my opinion.
Yeah, like don't like, you can try to, like, I tried not to shop at Hobby Lobby, like, because the thing is that they give money towards anti-abortion groups. So I tried not to shop there. And there's things like in South Carolina, there's this place called Maurice's Barbecue. Fucking delicious barbecue. Okay. But this is not an endorsement, because the guy who owns it actually has a church attached to a lot of the barbecue joints, where he preaches that blacks are evil and should be separated from whites. But this said, there are blacks that still go, black people that still go to Maurice's and get barbecue.
Surprised that they're serving them. I'm surprised that they're actually serving them at those places. That's what
they do, because money, dude. When it comes, and that's my point.
You know, I don't think the barbecue is as delicious as the hypocrisy here on both sides.
Oh no, you have not tried.
well, it's just like Chick-fil-A would always serve a gay person. They won't care if the person's flamboyant as hell. It's just that
they're gonna get money against them, but you know.
Well, in the end, it doesn't matter because you know, when the founder made his stance, I know gay people that still go there because they like the chick. They like the chicken. It's like,
oh, I just stay away because it's like a fucking $20 chicken sandwich. But you know,
I hate the chicken.
Okay. Now they do have delicious lemonade. I will say that. And the thing is,
the only other place that has better lemonade is Hot Dog on a Stick. Honestly,
yeah, that is true. But so that's the thing.
Are these places in Texas? Is that what it is?
Hot Dog on a Stick is not only in Texas Fest.
I'd never fucking heard of it.
Do you live
under a rock or something? I don't even know.
There's no fucking hot dog. The only place where Hot Dogs on a Stick in Minnesota is at the State Fair.
Now, to be fair, it is in the
South. You can get everything on a stick.
Yeah.
Hot Dog on a Stick is the name of a franchise where you wear this very colorful tall hat.
Never heard of it. Never heard of it.
I've heard of it.
It's not around here.
It's not really every... Okay, but the thing is that I think we can say that boycotts are just fucking retarded because they're just... That you're not going to be... Like, they never work.
It's awareness. It's really
unless
awareness.
Unless it's, like, something that everybody can agree on. Like the Xbox One. Everyone can agree that sucks balls.
X-Bone.
Yes, yeah. X-Bone. Everyone agrees we don't want the NSA watching us play video games.
Apparently not, actually.
Well, like, I love that they're saying, oh, we've sold out of pre-orders. Well, yeah, you only allocated, like, 16 per store, where Sony allocated 50. Yes, a manufactured sellout is so great.
Don't get me started. I used to be a huge gamer.
Dude, I am still a very big gamer, and I love this shit. And I also am laughing my ass off at EA and Microsoft's little recent marriage of stupidity, where they're both decided... We're going to rape everyone.
Allegedly.
Well, allegedly rape everyone.
No, I'm not a console gamer anymore. I am a console gamer
just because, like, I witnessed my brother spending hundreds of fucking dollars on keeping up with the latest PC. Now, things have gotten a lot better, but, like, back in the 90s, it was just...
I flipped.
New video card every 6 months.
I flipped. Ah! I'm a PC game now. Mostly I play like Civ 5 now, but yeah.
Yeah.
that's all the game you need.
I thought you would have heard about Hot Dog and the Stick.
Never
there was
heard
like
of it.
An incident where like one of these franchises had the owner was like asking I think it was something along the lines of he was asking him to go topless when they were in the back or something like that. It was ridiculous or something like that. I remember this a while back.
They have awesome lemonade, by the way. Just saying, they have awesome lemonade there.
They do have awesome lemonade.
I have never fucking seen this place.
Well, I mean, like...
They have the best hats and yeah.
It looks old school. It looks fun.
It is really good. But let's see. No, you're not going to be able to find out where I am.
Even their turkey dog is good. And it's a turkey dog. That's how good it is.
Okay, it looks like they're mostly in... Yeah, that's right. They're from California, so they're going to be mostly... Like, yeah, it looks like they're mostly in California.
And the South.
No, Texas. Like, because, like, when I say the South, I really mean Texas, because they're not really any... They're not really that far into the South. It's not like Whataburger, where there are still a couple left in the South.
I love Whataburger.
Whataburger's awesome. There's still one in Pensacola, Florida, and there's one, I think, still in Birmingham, Alabama. Yeah.
They have the best fast food ketchup. They make their own ketchup, and it only has 7 ingredients in it. That's how you know it's good ketchup. It only has 7 ingredients in it, and you can pronounce them all.
Yeah, I remember my grandma used to go and get the ketchup.
Anyway,
webcomic. They actually sell the ketchup in huge bottles, huge squeeze balls now, in Central Market.
Cool.
Holy shit. That's awesome.
All right.
Let's
stop talking about food.
Yeah, stop talking about food.
I'll buy and ship you some if you want it.
No, I don't think
that'll keep. That might not keep.
We have non-high fructose corn syrup as a poly. It's not in any of the food here. So the ketchup tastes awesome here.
It's 7 ingredients. Awesome.
All right. So, you remember that guy who sued the oatmeal for funny junk?
And then Charles Carrion.
I actually have heard of Charles Carrion. I heard his father called him one day to try to give him advice about this.
Yes, this is a follow-up article.
He told him, Carrion, my wayward son.
And this is a follow-up article. The article itself that we're going to link is about 3 months old, but we never actually heard the end of it on the webcomic Beacon. So the end of it is, Monty.
Well, what ended up happening is that he did try and sue a site that was satirizing him. And so what happened is that, you know, this website, what was it called? It's on the... But basically what was happening is they countersued him, and what happened is that Cameron tried to avoid the cease and – I forget what specifically the court order was, but Cameron tried to avoid the court order, and so the lawyer for the site that was countersuing him spent quite a bit of time stalking him down, And so just the accumulated charges of this lawyer trying to stalk Cameron down.
Oh, right, right. He was like hiding and like hiding and such to avoid the being delivered papers.
Yes, he was avoiding the delivery of the documents, and so yes, his efforts to avoid being handed some pieces of papers to cease and desist his behavior cost him $50,000. Where if he had just, you know, accepted the documents and dropped all his actions, it would have only cost him maybe $200, maybe $725 at most.
I used to deliver summons once. It was a lot of times it was kind of boring, but I had to do some investigative work sometimes, and I dressed up in a disguise once.
So maybe you should become a process server. You can that's a job you can apply for.
That's going to become a big job, you know, as people can't pay their healthcare and stuff.
So you sound like you enjoy this sort of thing. So that's what you should do. You should become a process server.
There's a reason why I don't do it anymore, Ben. There's a reason why I'm not a telemarketer anymore, Ben. But
a process server, you get to go into the out of doors, you get some exercise, you get to pretend you're a detective, you can wear disguises.
You can beat them to death.
I don't have the mental endurance to go against people. I absolutely love customer service. But
yes,
but that's
you love
when you're
customer service,
doing
but you don't like being a telemarketer.
I get what he's saying, because like I can understand, like sometimes when you're, you know, giving some of these summons, I'm sure it's pretty heartbreaking, and that you know that like this is going to end this person's life
or mine if they want to shoot me.
Yeah, if they attack you, because I knew some bounty hunters and
oh, I want to be a bounty hunter.
Oh,
of course you do, Ben.
No, you don't.
I want to see that.
Okay, one of the bounty hunters came home one night with broken ribs because the redneck, he was repossessing the car, and you know, the guy came out with a big bat and smacked him upside, you know, the chest and broke his ribs. And then he showed up at our house and he was like, "Oh my God, I hurt so much." I'm like, go to the fucking hospital. Go to the fucking hospital.
Jesus Christ.
It's not exactly fun.
Not exactly.
But yes, this is hilarious.
Yeah, it's like, who's that asshole from the gaming industry always against Rockstar and then finally got disbarred?
Oh, that guy who's in Alabama.
Jack Thompson?
Yeah,
the guy who just kept making false, you know, totally abusing his power as an attorney and finally got disbarred.
We got disbarred after the Alabama incident that where the cops had arrested this kid, and the kid happened to grab the gun out of the cop's holster as the cop was leaning over him, and he shot the two cops. And they tried to blame it on Grand Theft Auto, and Jack Thompson shows up and says, "Oh, I'll take the case." Well, he wasn't able to practice law in Alabama. So he got disbarred in Florida because there are so many incidents in Florida that Florida just finally said, "You know what? Fuck you." And they just disbarred him because they were like, "This is just ridiculous. You're just an ambulance chaser."
Yeah.
Yeah. But that was a big thing in Alabama, because they actually a news crew came to our GameStop when this happened and tried to interview us, and I was like, "No, I don't know anything about that. Why are you here?" But then one of my coworkers went out there, and then he got in trouble for that. So I was just
fucking idiot. You don't go out.
We didn't know anything about this, and also
you don't go out. You're just an employee. You don't go out and talk to the fucking press. That's.
Well, and also, you have nothing to do with this. This had nothing to do with video games. The only reason it had anything to do with video games was because the cops were trying to cover their ass because the two cops were stupid for bending, like, that one cop was stupid for bending over the guy with an unsecured gun. Yeah. And the kid was able to grab it. Like, I'm sorry. That has nothing to do with video games. That's just idiocy.
That's just bad. That's not even following procedure. You're supposed to make sure your weapon's secure. And
now you know why that fucking police report was misspelled. It's things like that. Or like the incident where the cop, there was a guy, these two cops had arrested this guy, and then they were trying to shoot his dog. And the cop started firing shots at the dog. And one of the shots, he didn't hit the dog, but one of the shots ricocheted and hit his partner. Because, you know, it's stuff like that. So anyway.
Yeah.
So Kitty Hawk, going back to an earlier topic, I'm looking at this red bubble. Do you know the quality of the shirts yet?
I have a friend who got one like a few years back, and she said the quality was kind of dodgy. But she's going to, but she's heard good things recently, so she's going to try it again.
Well,
and
here's
I'm
the thing.
See.
Here's the thing: when you're dealing with digital shirt prints, I mean, it's not. I'm going to guess it's not screen printed.
No, of
it
course
is screen.
It's screen printed, but it's actually, this is probably digital printing. Now, I will say this: there are some good digital printers out there. In fact, I actually looked into them for a while, but then I had to move, so that got put off.
Yeah.
And I actually, the Hornet was one that I really want. They're getting down in price and they are decent. And the thing is that it's not like Cafe Press, who was literally doing iron on transfers.
Yeah.
This is actually like a bubble jet printer, and it's good. I have several shirts that have been digitally printed and the quality is really good. The issue is that you have to find out which printer they have, because there's several different kinds of printers, and they each have their advantages, they have their disadvantages.
Well, the one thing I'm looking for, the one thing I'm looking for is the quality of the cotton in the shirts itself, because I have very dry skin, so I always look for Egyptian cotton.
It's probably not going to be Pima.
Damn it!
But. Well, I mean, Pima is so expensive that, like, it's generally not. I will admit that I did do a run of shirt on Pima cotton once, and it was very, very nice. But you know, I probably won't do that again because
it's expensive.
It is very expensive.
I know, well, but I just love the feel of Egyptian cotton. It's just
Then what you should do is go buy some Egyptian cotton shirts and get a t-shirt printer, and then you can just make your own. That's actually what I was going to do. It's like make my own shirts for myself, and then like if other people wanted them, they could just buy them from me.
Here's the thing with doing printing, like when you're doing, if you want a really good.
Beth's gonna tell us about printing.
Ben, this is just from my experience. And you can feel free to correct me after I say my bit, but it's like when you're, especially with dark shirts, if you're doing screen printing, a lot of times you're gonna want to get a hit of white underneath.
That's called
your
a
graphic.
Base.
You do that with digital printing as well.
I was just about to bring that up too, because it's like I've seen digital printing where there's no hit of white at the bottom. There's no base.
Okay.
It's just printed right on the shirt. And those
and I can tell you
look
why.
Really
it's,
bad.
The white ink is very expensive, and there are some printers don't actually have the ability to do it. Mm. It also adds another step in the process, because what you have to do is you have to do the white layer, then you have to cure that, then you have to do the next layer, and then you have to cure that. And so it adds to the process.
But it looks so much better.
But the thing is, they do use American Apparel, and I do like American Apparel shirts because they feel really good. And also, speaking of not creating suffering, American Apparel is still American-owned, and they pay their employees very well. So there you go. If you're looking for t-shirts, I really highly recommend American Apparel.
There's a shirt I got it clearly has no base, and it's a black shirt. You can tell.
Oh, God.
And it doesn't, I mean, it looks okay from a distance, but when you're close up. But here's the other thing. And this is a question. I was wondering if the thickness of the shirt also has, because it's actually a very light sort of thin shirt, and it actually feels really nice. It's not like a thick cotton t-shirt. And I was wondering if a thinner shirt will actually hold the digital ink better or not.
No, it's not about that. It really
it's more about the weave than it is of the thinness.
Okay. Yeah, and it also has to just do with like how good is your printer is. Honestly, when it comes down to it, it's how good is your printer? And if your printer isn't decent, then you're going to have a bad time. But now I'm looking at Redbubble. They do the Black Milk t-shirts, and I've seen several of those Black Milk t-shirts around town. So now I think about it, actually, I think the quality is very good, because Black Milk is from here in Brisbane, and there's an entire crazy community built around them. And like it is crazy. They sell leggings, swimsuits, and they're like printed here in Brisbane. And actually, if I wanted to go pick up an order right now, I could just walk down to their little warehouse and do it.
Cool.
In Brisbane, they allow you to do that. I really, 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 really want to get the fish tights and go as Lady Aquaman.
All right. We have just a little bit of time left in this episode. We're actually over time. Real quick, Kitty Hawk, did you want to mention LoliCon that was coming to your place? Or what was it?
Oh, no. I'm not going to mention LoliCon. LoliCon was something I heard about this weekend. Zix, which is the zine and indie comic symposium here in Brisbane, it's this new con that's starting up. It looks really cool. I know several of the people who have started it. Looks to be a good time. It's going to be over a couple of days in last days of August. And I highly recommend people go look at. I'm sure we're going to add the links in the podcast notes. If you're here in Australia, you know, check it out, especially here. If you're here in Brisbane, definitely come on out for this. It looks like it's going to be a good time. There's going to be some indie comics, some zines. We're going to have some workshops, and there's going to be a concert. And if you back the Possible, there's a lot of really cool rewards, like packs of zines and custom skateboards. I actually am looking at the custom skateboard. I actually know the guy who does it. So I highly recommend if you're in Australia or especially in the Brisbane area, you know, check it out. Looks like it's going to be a fun time, and get on, you know, you can help a brand new convention get off the ground, and in return, you'll get some really awesome rewards.
And I just got one last quick thing before we go. Jenny Everywhere Day is coming up August 13th, 2013. Anybody who knows me knows that I'm going to talk about Jenny Everywhere. I believe it's her 12th birthday this year. I could be wrong about that. Zero was 2001. So JennyEverywhereDay.com. If you would like to get in on that for this year and make a comic submission or an art submission, go ahead, go to JennyEverywhereDay.com and follow the instructions there. My friend Benj Christensen runs that. In addition to that, my typical sort of, Jenny Everywhere Day is coming up. I better update the Shifter Archive has gone through. I just updated over 20 pieces of cameos and art to the website, and I'm looking to get the rest done before August. So that's really good at theshifterarchive.com. And if you don't know anything about Jenny Everywhere, go to jennyeverywhere.net, and that'll tell you basically all you need to know and more. But that is all for this episode of the Webcomic Beacon here at webcomicbeacon.com. And I just got a text message. And once again, we've had Ben Carver from Animation Aficionados.
Thank you.
Monty Rohde from Vegetables for Dessert.
Thank you.
And
Kitty Hawk of Sparkling Generation Valkyrie Yuki, SGBY.com. Sexy fun. You'll love it.
Webcomic Beacon at webcomicbeacon.com.
Yay!
Kitty Hawk found out that the most plausible explanation about the special editions of Star Wars.
Oh yes, this is wonderful. So
Pablo told me this. I relayed it to her, so she'll tell
you. I looked more into it, and it looks plausible. It's really probably about Lucas fucking over his ex-wife. So here's the story: Lucas's ex-wife was an editor. In fact, she worked on a lot of like Scorsese's films. as an editor. And
she actually was one of the best in the industry in the 70s. Let's get that.
She actually won an Academy Award for her work on Star Wars. And this
the only
was
a Academy Award.
And this was a source of tension between her and Lucas. Lucas actually is the reason American Graffiti was made. Like, she edited THX and she just told Lucas, like, this is the coldest, like, most horrible film. Like, I really don't understand this. No one is going to understand this.
She's right.
Yeah, she was totally right. And the thing is that he got so angry at her and said, I can write wonderful characters. You don't know. She's like, no, you can't. He said, watch me. And he did American Graffiti. But getting to Star Wars, by the time Star Wars happened, he kind of got jealous, and he also was like wanting her to just run the back scenes. Like, he actually had her become the interior designer of Skywalker Ranch, which she didn't want to do. She really wanted to go do editing, and she wanted to actually be in the business again. But he was like, no, I want you to be doing this. So she did. And she just became progressively more and more depressed. And eventually she fell in love with the guy who installed the stained glass dome in Skywalker Ranch. And when she went to Lucas and said, I'm leaving you because you've just been such an asshole to me, he begged her to stay. He said, I'll let you do anything. I'll let you edit. I'll let you do whatever you want. Just please stay with me. And she said, no. And you're going to owe me some fucking money because I helped you build this empire. So she got $200 million. And this is the reason that Pixar, the reason I know about this is we were talking about Pixar. This is why Lucas had to sell off Pixar, was because he had to pay off that settlement. So when he decided to do the special editions, I think a good part of his motivation wasn't just, I want to try out this 3D. I think it was also to get rid of her editor credit, because she now no longer has that credit. He is now credited as the editor. And so now she doesn't get any money from it. And that is why I think the original cut is no longer in print, because if it went back into print, she would regain her credit as the editor. And this is just basically his big fuck you. Now, Lucas, I think, is dying, because everything tells me that him selling off the company, him immediately getting an award from the president, I think he's dying. And if the way I'm going to know for certain is if he does release the original cuts, maybe as this like last, like, you know, I'm sorry, but I don't think he will. I think he's probably a vindictive bitch. So, you know, this is really just about, you stupid bitch, you left me and took $200 million. If that's true, I'll tip my hat, because that's pretty smart. But at the same time, like, he is a son of a bitch.
He has terminal turkey neck disease.
Yeah. And so now it makes sense. It really totally makes sense why the original cuts have not been re-released, because he could make shit tons of money re-released, putting that out. But it's all about fucking her over.
Yeah, and but
allegedly
he owns all of that.
Allegedly. All right.
Allegedly, and I'd say it makes the most, that actually makes the most sense. Like, it really, because like, there's no reason not to re-release them, because you could make a ton of money, because you could sell it as like a set of, here's the new cut and here's the old cut. And it makes a lot more sense than, this is my artistic integrity. This makes more sense because he really hated her. In fact, he went back and edited things, like, in their archives, so that she was erased. That's how much he hates her. Like, she is no longer mentioned by name in certain documents now. Like, she's been erased. Oh, wow. Yeah. That's why Noah's heard of her, because basically he erased her from history.
And see,
and
she
tried
was,
to do so with the movies.
And like I said, let's be clear, in the 70s, she was the editor everyone wanted.
Yeah, she was really good. And like, she doesn't work anymore because, well, she's got the money, but also because she can't. Because like, she is basically blacklisted. Like, Lucas has basically made it so that she can't work. So
Let's be totally clear. The original edit of Star Wars that the studio made, would have bombed terribly.
Oh yeah, definitely.
She worked overtime to make that final cut.
Yeah, and like the thing is like she worked on all three films as an editor. So like she does deserve credit. But the thing is that he did not like the fact that she was like ups because he left her alone. He basically turned her into a den mother for Skywalker Ranch, made her an interior designer. Like he was very bad to her.
He was trying to turn her into a traditional woman, and she totally was not that.
No, and it's obvious that he is kind of conservative in ways. So
kinda.
Kinda. I'm just trying to be nice here. But yeah, it's probably the best explanation. That actually makes a lot more sense than any other theory I've ever heard. That it's basically about he hates his ex-wife so much, he tried to erase her from history. That's pretty fucking evil. And also awesome. I have to tip my hat, because that is a level of, like...
vindictive bullshit?
Yeah, that is a level of vindictive bullshit that I am like... wow, that is awesome. But at the same time, like, I'd still punch him in the face.
So she's like, the one who could have made the second trilogy not suck.
She actually said in a lot of cases when he would run the story by her, she would say, "You were a fucking idiot." Like, she would say, she was wrong about, like, killing off Obi-Wan. She did say that, like, I don't understand that, but there were other things.
She did push for the death scene to happen in front of Luke versus not.
Yeah, that was one thing that she said. If you're going to do it, you're gonna have to have it be very emotional, because like the problem with Lucas is he can't convey emotions very well, and that was her biggest issue with him. Was she would constantly say to him, "You're not emotionally involving the audience," and it's pretty fucking obvious now that he can't from the prequels. Is definitely the big fuck you to her. Like, I can do this.
No,
so if he's motivated, the thing
to keep in mind though is the original cut of Star Wars was extremely different. There was going to be multiple runs on the Death Star Canyon of Death. There was going to be multiple runs, and she's the one that said you have to make it one run, because if they keep on doing the run over and over again, it gets rid of the emotional tension of when Han shows up.
Yep.
And she says, if no one is coming out of their chairs cheering when Han Solo and the Millennium Falcon shows up, you didn't do your job, George.
Yep.
Well, there's two runs.
She knew what she was talking about.
Anyway, I do got to get going, guys.
Okay.
As much as on topic as this is.
It's wonderful gossip.
Yeah, whatever. Okay, but thanks again, you guys.
Thank you.
And next week, I'll see Ben and Kitty Hawk. And I'll let everybody else know when there is another newscast.
All right, cool.
All right, sounds good to me.
All right, thank you.
Thanks again, guys. See ya.